What really gets my dick hard is...
So fucking what?
Bonjour, Quebec! Are you feeling good tonight? That's nice to hear, but we are here for one purpose only. To make you feel better, all right? And you are here to make us feel better, all right? So we'll have a little contest tonight, and we're gonna make some history here. And we hope that you like the old stuff.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this week is episode 35, and we're talking about Quebec Magnetic. We're getting back into a live performance, a official DVD by Metallica.
Well, and I figured it was a good DVD to talk about since last week we talked about old Robert Trujillo.
Yeah, man, and he's a monster in this thing.
Yeah, he does a good job. Looks good, plays good. All that. Before we talk about Quebec, are you saying Quebec or Quebec?
I think it's up for debate. If anyone from Quebec or Quebec is listening, please correct us in the proper way to pronounce that.
I think I'm going to go ahead and commit to calling it Quebec because we're going to say it a lot. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
why don't I do Quebec and you do Quebec, and that way we're half right.
Okay. Well, Hetfield said Quebec on the intro to this show. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. We'll follow Papa Het into
that's
the
right,
darkness.
Yeah.
Before we do that, we're going to do the housekeeping stuff. We're going to talk about emails and patrons and stuff. First of all, our socials, just look up Metal Up Your Podcast and whatever the social thing is you like. The most important social thing that we're doing, though, is this thing called Patreon. And it's a way for you to donate to the show. We have different tiers. There's different incentives for the amount of money you want to give. We got a shit ton of new patrons this week. I'm going to list their names. At the base level, you at least get a shout out on the show.
That's right. Yeah, that's the base level thing. And you can just go to patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast to read all about it.
Our new patrons this week are Jason Conforti, Dylan McIntyre, Jesse Squire, Simon Masters, David Bill, and Rye Taylor. Thank you guys so much for your support.
Thank you very much.
The most exciting thing we're doing via Patreon is that Ethan and I have cooked up a 6-song EP of Metallica covers.
Correct.
And there's a certain, I think it's if you donate $5 to the show, you get access to that. So
yeah.
We were at a point in the making of that record where we can actually play you guys a couple of clips from it so you can kind of hear what the sauce is.
That's right. Yeah, me and Clint are really excited about it. We've kind of sent clips back and forth to each other since I've been on the road, and he's been on the road and stuff, and we're both getting pretty pumped about this. So yeah, let's go ahead and play it. I did a really chill version of Unforgiven 3.
And then I did the chill version of Low Man's Lyric. I think the chill version is the flavor for this EP.
They've all gone away. They've all gone away. How can I be lost if I got nowhere to go? Of gold, how come it's got so cold? And how can I be lost in remembrance I relive? And how can I blame you when it's me I can't forgive?
I can't see.
Well, there you go. There was a little taste of it.
Little taste. Yeah. If you want the whole thing, you can go to Patreon to learn more about it. It'll probably finish sometime this fall. It's a little, you know, we can't really knock it out quickly because of, you know, scheduling, traveling, all that stuff.
Right. So anyway, go check that out. The best way to contact us is via email, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We get more than 10 emails a week, but we try to whittle it down and just read 10 of them. So, Ethan, you want to start us off with our weekly emails?
I would love to do that.
Great. That's great.
That's great. Oh, my God.
That's great.
All right, our first email is from Frank Groen. Hey guys, not yet a Patreon member, but have some fun ideas for the EP. Low Man's lyrics sang by Papa. I think he means Pawpaw.
Pawpaw. Well, the trash fire's warm, but nowhere safe from the storm. Baby, you don't understand and won't cry for this bad. Low Man is due now.
There you go, Frank. There's
pretty good idea.
There's your sample of that. Well, here's his next idea. Anesthesia with Hulk Hogan saying the bass solo take one. I think it would go something like, bass solo take one, brother.
But the thing is, he'd be talking to himself because he wants to play. He wants to be the bass player.
Bass solo take one, me.
Me? That's a really great cross-section with Sweating Bullets, too. Hello, me.
Yeah, Dick, it absolutely is. His last idea is Enter Sandman with Hulk doing the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep bit.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Now I lay me down to sleep, brother.
I don't care.
Pray to the Hulk Maniacs. hang on, I got it. Pray to the Hulk Maniacs my vitamins to sleep.
That is never not funny.
They're my vitamins to keep. I got it wrong.
Oh, shit. Vitamins to sleep.
Vitamins to sleep, man. You can take vitamins to sleep, I guess.
If I get tapped out before.
I pray to the Hulk Maniacs American blood to take.
If I rip my shirt before I wake.
Yeah, there you go. All right. He says finishes by saying, keep up the great work. Haven't missed a single podcast every Monday since the Ride of the Lightning episode.
Oh,
P.S.
man.
There's a free beer waiting for each of you when you guys are in Amsterdam.
Man, thank you, Frank.
I think there's a lot more than beer waiting for us in Amsterdam.
Yeah, there's a Hulkamaniacs vinyl.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you were talking about something else.
I probably was.
Thanks, Frank. Hopefully we can see you sometime in Amsterdam.
That would be awesome.
When we're on our World Metal Up Your Podcast tour.
That's right.
Which is just us drinking beer in a bunch of towns in New Jersey.
Yeah, we're going to get really fat on that tour.
Wes Brown writes, don't listen to the haters. You guys rule. Go check out our last episode if you want to know what he's talking about. We are not going to any longer feed the trolls.
That's right.
He says I've been an avid podcast listener for the past decade and can say this show has been one of my all-time surprise finds. I started the podcast a couple of months ago, the moment I started listening to Metallica. You read that right. I made it into my mid-30s knowing maybe two Metallica songs. I grew up listening to punk and ska. Shout out to the Supertones, which is Ethan's old band. Very cool band. I grew up listening to punk and ska and thought Metallica was a douchey butt rock band.
Whoa.
But earlier this year. Yeah, that kind of hurts a little bit, right? That's like, kind of hurts my feelings.
He's come around. Let's listen to him.
He says, earlier this year, I was watching Billions, the TV show, which I've never heard of. The main character wears a lot of Metallica shirts, and the band even makes a cameo. Then I heard Hetfield on Joe Rogan's podcast and decided to see what other Metallica podcasts there were, and haven't stopped listening to you guys since. I'm assuming he's quit his job. His marriage is dissolved.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because he just won't stop listening to us.
Well, thanks, man.
He says, so I discovered a love for the band through the lamest way possible, TV and podcast. I don't think that's lame, dude.
I discovered the band through TV.
Yeah, me too. Television, for sure. He says, I'm fully on board now and may someday work my way up to battle jacket status.
Hey,
please,
man.
Add Kansas City, New Jersey to the list of places where you have a beer waiting. Wes, P.S., since y'all are Beatles fans, too, I thought you might like, screw it, we're just going to talk about the Beatles.
That's cool.
Burping. Sorry, I'm burping. He says, they probably have some episode ideas you could steal. I did go check that podcast out, and it's cool, yeah.
That's awesome, yeah. I love the name.
Screw it, we're just going to talk about the Beatles. Yeah. That's good.
Totally. Well, thanks, Wes, for writing in. That's awesome. Hey, thanks, and Wes. As we all know, it's never too late to become a Metallica fan.
No, dude, welcome to the family.
Welcome, sir. Our next email is from Danny Derryberry.
Danny Derryberry.
Danny Derryberry. He says, I'm a Jason guy. Always have been, always will be. To be fair, I didn't even know who Cliff was until 1992. Give me a break. I was 12.
All right. Break extended.
If Jason rejoined today, I would be elated, but he won't. So I've accepted that Robert is the guy, and I dig what he does, even the crab walk. He doesn't try to be anything else besides Robert Trujillo, and that's what makes him a great fit for Metallica. He's not Cliff, he's not Jason. Those days are over, but we will always have them to look back on. But now, he says, they still kill it every time they play, and he's a huge part of that. Sorry, my screen, I gotta adjust the brightness here so I can read these better. There it is.
You got one of them dark screens. The screen was dark.
It was kind of dark, man, tell you what. he said, seemed like the appreciation of him grew throughout the course of that show. I hope it did. Tons of respect for a very talented musician who seems like a real legit guy. Keep being Clint and Ethan. Cheers, our good friend, Danny Derryberry.
Well, we don't know how to be anything other than Clint and Ethan now.
All I know is how to be myself, brother.
He's right, man. Robert's great in that band. And,
of course.
And, you know, you sit down and really think about it for 90 minutes like we all did last week. So that's really kind of the conclusion, right? That Robert's great.
Yeah, and even rewatching Quebec Magnetic,
yeah.
I felt that the whole time I was focusing on Robert and his bass lines and
me
how
too.
Good his bass tone.
Especially on the Justice tunes that they do.
Oh, yeah, totally. I made sure to, like, you know, put my good headphones on when I watched it just to really get the good audio quality happening. And yep. I'm so glad I did, and I just, yeah, like I said, I just kept watching Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Danny, for those good thoughts. See, it's cool to hear from a dude who's like a straight-up Jason guy, but he's on board with Robert. Like, there's room for all that stuff,
because
I would align myself with Danny on that. A good friend of the show, Laurie Laker, says, hi, Clint and Ethan, still loving the shows, listening to each of them when they drop. Oddly proud to be one of the OG Metal Up Your Podcast listeners, really enjoying the community we're building via podcast and email dialogue. Good stuff. The more Metallica family, the better. 100%
agree.
He says, the Justice episode may be my favorite yet. It's in my top three albums, so hearing that dissected in such detail was great fun. Since everyone else is throwing theirs into the mix, here's my song order. We asked everyone to rank their Justice tunes.
Yep.
He says, one is the song One. Two, Harvester. Three, Blackened. Four, Dire's Eve. Five, Short of Straw. Six, Title Track. Seven, To Live Is to Die. Eight, Freight Ends. Nine, Eye of the Beholder. And then, thank goodness, I was so relieved when Lori sent this, because remember when I said on the Robert episode that he, like, has a million names?
Right, yeah.
So we actually have a clip of that we're going to insert right here.
Roberto Agustin Miguel Santiago San Juan Trujillo Veracruz Kazoo.
He writes this, as to Robert Agustin Miguel Santiago Samuel Trujillo Veracruz, the man's just a fucking monster, a stellar bassist with some positive vibes. I can't imagine how much of a relief it was for the guys to find him and bring his energy and talent into the fold. Kirk finally found a surfing buddy, Lars found a karaoke pal, and James found the level-headed soul to bounce his stuff off of. As the longest-serving bassist, I think Rob's impact won't be properly appreciated until Metallica have stopped touring and making records. He's the one who made them whole again, and as much as I do love Jason, I can't help but feel they never fully trusted him as a musician and someone with a viewpoint the way they now trust Rob to take his talent and run with it in the Metallica vein. I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he might be right, actually. He says, I love his playing on Hardwired, in particular just holding the backbeat together with Lars and adding that gut-punching heavy sound they've lacked in a few of their more middling records. Thanks for everything and cheers, Laurie.
Man, thanks, Laurie. You make some really good points in there. I find it interesting, you know, him talking about, like, that they never fully trusted Jason as a musician.
Right.
Maybe
as a songwriter.
I think more of a songwriter rather than just a player, because Jason's obviously a great bass player, but I think it's more in the songwriting world. But I mean, you know, Rob's got a whole different style. He plays with his fingers. I mean, when Rob plays, you can tell it's Rob. This is a great email and a bunch of good points in it.
Yeah, thanks, Laurie.
Thanks, buddy. All right, next one is from Rye Taylor. Greetings from Dublin.
What's new that? Patron, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of wish that. I would have known about old Rye Taylor when I was in Dublin not
there,
too long
yeah.
ago. I was there for like 4 days.
You and Rye guy could be best of friends right now, man.
Yeah, that would be
you
awesome.
You guys could have fallen in love, and you might still be in Dublin because you quit your job to be with Rye.
Gosh, that would have been pretty cool. I do love Dublin. The Irish people are great.
I could live there.
Yeah, I could live there. The weather is amazing there. That's what I love. It's nice and chilly in the summertime. But anyways, enough about that. So Rye says, greetings from Dublin. Thank you for the many hours of entertainment, guys. Started listening to your podcast only about a month ago. I've found myself yelling, fuck yeah, turning off the podcast and then going to the track you guys are talking about. I have a bad habit of trying to read ahead.
I know, man. You just got to let it flow, man.
God, I got to calm down here. Okay. Hopefully that counts as extra listens on iTunes. I am on the Jason episode now. Fuck yeah.
I love it. He really is saying fuck yeah.
He really is, yeah.
he can't even not do it in this email.
Yeah, I said fuck yeah. Already my most anticipated. Love Jason. But I skipped ahead to the load episode today. You hint a combination load-reload mashup episode. Load/reload were my entry point into Metallica, and combined with Cunning Stunts, that era exposed me to everything Metallica. I got a used copy of Load at a garage sale back in 1998, so someone didn't dig it. It quickly became my favorite album. I picked up Garage Inc. when it came out, along with Reload and Kill. So it took me a while to arrive to the real masterpieces in the catalog, but this was the perfect entry for me. Similar to you. I mean, you came in on the Load/Reload era as well.
I came in on Black Album, but Load was like my first, you know, record of where I was a fan of Metallica.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He goes on to say, that being said, I do acknowledge that they may have overextended themselves with a twin Load/Reload release. Looking back on their timeline, it's easy to see this overload as a big part of why the albums are not well received by fans. He finishes by saying, that's that. Sorry for the length of this email. You brought all this rubbish out of me with your great shows. Throwing you some patron love, too, and we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Would love to hear your Load/Reload concepts, maybe on your Reload episode. Thanks a million. Flush it out.
we're gonna do our kind of fantasy if Load/Reload were one record. We'll do it after we talk about Reload.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I think it's fine they released two records. I think it's no problem whatsoever.
But, I mean, I get it. Like, when those came out, you know, I was definitely on board with the band already.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, with everything from the style change to the look change to all that, it was just...
It was a lot. Yeah, it wasn't to swallow.
We've talked about that. It wasn't the Metallica that we knew and loved.
Right.
But the older I got, the more I loved those records.
Yeah. Well, because they sound slower and sludgier and maybe even dumber to some people, but if you really kind of get in there and give it a chance, it's actually some pretty... I think it's James's most honest and his deepest lyrics, and I think that even some of those riffs that sound kind of schlocky or bluesy, they're actually pretty complicated, well-composed.
Yeah, for sure.
At least in my opinion. So thanks to Rye for the email and for the patron donation.
Yeah, man, appreciate it.
Chelsea Bowen, who's a friend of the show, writes, I listened to the Trujillo episode at work tonight and almost spit my coffee and donuts all over my patrol vehicle after hearing the Clint-hating Facebook message and Clint's reply. Halfway just kidding, I'm the president and only member of the No Krispy Kreme in Uniform Club. If anyone saw me driving around and laughing alone in my squad car, they probably thought I was completely insane. I don't think you're annoying, Clint. You guys have a rad thing going, and I look forward to the new episode each week. Well, tell my wife that. Thank you. are there any stickers or... they asked about the stickers and koozies. I'd love to put a sticker on one of my guitar cases and right beside my Kiss Army one. The angry Facebook user would be proud. Thanks, guys, Chelsea. That was a sweet message.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you so much. Next email is from Joey Swords. Joey Swords says, three words, more vegan Ethan.
Well, I'll try to... Wait, have I lost it? How does it go?
I
was going to eat a sandwich, but I was like ordering it. I don't eat eggs. I said I don't eat cheese. And God knows I don't eat any meat.
Oh, my gosh.
My rig is eating, but I don't eat eggs, though, unless they're fake eggs.
Joey ends his email. This is all his email is, just more vegan Ethan. And then he says, that turd-faced Clint hater on Facebook is rocking a micro-penis, no question. I've got nothing but love for the both of you guys. Keep the goods coming, brothers.
Oh, man. Thank you, Joey.
Thanks, Joey.
Okay, thanks, Joey. This next time I meet for lunch, just make sure it's not cheese. It looks like cheese, but when you bite into it, it's not cheese.
Oh, my gosh.
Kevin Van Dam writes, hello, Hulkamaniacs and
hello,
family
brother.
And friends. Should we insert Hulkamaniacs right now?
I don't know if people are sick of that song yet.
Someone wrote on the forums, it's been two episodes without Hulkamaniacs. What's wrong?
Something's wrong in the Metal Pure Podcast world.
Oh, So Kevin, who's also a patron of the show, writes, shout out to fellow fan Neil Hansen for his accurate assessment on episode 34 that Eye of the Beholder is the best song on Justice, followed closely by Blacken. I thought I was the only person who held that opinion, but it's great to know there's at least one more person. He says, when I asked if they made Trans Ams anymore.
Yeah.
He says, they do not make Trans Ams anymore, unfortunately. Thus, there are no more bitchin' cars with fire chickens on the hood.
It's like they're a big like eagle logo with
okay,
like flames
yeah, that's
on.
Right.
He says, I like fire chickens better.
Yeah, fire chickens. He says, though in 1977, Metal Up Your Podcast branded Trans Am with some T-tops might be a great way to spread the metal gospel around Nashville. There should probably be a Patreon level to fund that. Yeah, we'll add that.
I think that'll be our next
$30,000 tier.
Could you imagine if when we went to the Detroit show, if we rolled up in a Metal Up Your Podcast Trans Am?
I can't imagine it, because guess who would have been really impressed by it and invited us to be his new best friends? One, Mr. James Hetfield.
Exactly.
Hey, man, hey, is that a Trans Am?
Hey, yeah. Speaking of Detroit, I'm actually in Detroit for the fourth time this year today.
Are you really there right now?
Yeah, I'm here again.
Wow.
So old what's Detroit. Up? What's up, Detroitites? Detroitians?
Detroitites. You know who lives up there is that TJ Moore guy.
That's right.
Thomas. He goes on to say, I love the episode on Rob. There were a lot of things I didn't know, especially in the true or false portion, and all of it confirms to me that he is just as cool as he is talented. I definitely agree that I miss Jason's backup vocals. I loved the growl and full throttle energy that Jason put into it, but I think Rob is steadily improving on it to his credit. I think so too. You can tell he's working on it.
Yeah, totally.
And I appreciate that about him. He says, also, I wrote in a little while ago and mentioned that I had snake bit passes for the Phoenix show. I must say it was a mind-blowing experience. By the way, you guys are right that Rob's bass tone is absolutely crushing live. I really, really dig it. Love how much the podcast has grown since the quote-unquote early days in January, and thanks as always for all the fan outreach you guys do.
No problem. Our pleasure.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, happy to do it. Well, go ahead.
No, you go first.
Well, he says that the early days in quotes, January does feel like a fucking long time ago.
It feels like an eternity ago. I think I'm on my third tour since we started this podcast. I've been to Europe already this year. Yeah, it's weird. Like when I tell people about the podcast that I tour with, that I'm, you know, new people I'm meeting on the road, I'm like, yeah, we started it just in January. I'm like, wait, that's like 7 months ago, but it seems like we've done this for way longer.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing.
It's great.
We've covered a lot of ground. We've done a lot of shit.
For sure.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, buddy. Next one is from Dylan McIntyre. Hello, fellows. I found your show about a week ago and found my new favorite cast. I'm from Cheyenne, Wyoming, New Jersey, and I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one who loves Bleeding Me, Fixer, and that one song that didn't make S&M, The Outlaw Torn. Kidding. Yep. Never going to live that one down still.
No. I actually wrote back to him and said, we must never, never stop the great holy work of trolling Ethan about the Outlaw Torn. We must never stop.
All right. Fine. It's cool with me. He goes on to say, I love the insight and the passion you guys have for the boys. I cannot wait for t-shirts, which we just
ordered. Oh, shit.
Ordered.
I need to talk about that after this email.
Or we don't. Wait, you can talk about something good or bad.
I meant to mention, I'm going to do a whole t-shirt thing. I forgot to mention it. I want to do that at the top.
All right, well,
but
get ready, everyone.
Just reminded me.
Clint's going to talk about t-shirts. And
ooh, everyone, I hope everyone's sitting down, because
yeah,
I'm about to talk about t-shirts.
You better sit down, man.
Excuse me, all 10,000 of you, you sitting down?
Yeah, y'all sitting down.
I'm about to talk about t-shirts.
About to talk about some t-shirts like the kind you get in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Get your face painted. Get your face painted.
Your
face
painted,
too. Yeah, get some face paint and get a t-shirt.
So Dylan says, I can't wait for the t-shirts. How about one with a mic coming out of the toilet instead of a spear or a dagger? Keep up with the great work. Dylan, thanks for the email. What is funny is when we first started this podcast or first started talking about doing it, that was an idea I had for a logo of some kind before I just settled and designed just the really basic black and white one was a microphone coming out of the toilet.
Yeah, and we actually have an artist who Nick Makoviak, who's a listener of the show, who says he wants to make us some specific art, and I think that would be fun to do like a limited edition run of t-shirts with that.
Yeah, t-shirts, or that'd be a great patch too.
So what are you talking about with the t-shirts, for those of you who don't know, who don't follow us on all the socials, which that's a good reason to go follow us on the socials, is because if you shit's happening during the week with news, with the podcast, and you can really only see that on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. So we, thanks to our patrons, finally ordered our first batch of t-shirts. That's just our logo. And it's from 85 Supply, our friends here in Nashville. And I really can't stress this enough, because we have some 85 Supply shirts just from their company that they gave us. They're super duper comfortable. They're not cheap pieces of shit. I swear to you, you'll see when you get them. Like, these are super comfy shirts.
I actually order like just normal t-shirts to wear through my friend Trevor, 85, and it's just my plain black t-shirts, and I'm wearing one right now. Like, I wear them. I probably bring 15 of them on tour with me. Just
they're so comfortable, man.
Very.
So we're kind of like just seeing how the t-shirt game goes. So we only ordered less than 40, and we've already sold 10 of them. So if you want to check the shirts out, they're $20, including shipping, and I'll probably throw in a few stickers with it, too.
Oh, yeah.
So write into us, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com, and just tell us what size you want, and we'll get that going. And we're going to get more, but this is like kind of our first little limited edition first batch. And we might do something a little different for every shirt every time we do an order. So
yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Dylan, for reminding us about that and for the killer email.
Yeah, man.
Mike Talica 771 says, hello again. He's written in before. The show's getting better each week. Keep up the good work. I have a question regarding a discussion you guys had during the Rob episode. How exactly are songwriting credits determined? My friends and I have brought this up from time to time over the years of fandom and have never really figured it out. It's understood, of course, that Lars is a huge part of the arrangement and everything, but we've never really understood how the one guy in the band that doesn't play a stringed instrument is a credited writer on every song, but the guy that plays guitar solos isn't. Which I understand his point. We'll get to this in a second. He says, not a knock on Lars, but just curious. Now we joke around when we listen to a song that's credited to Hetfield Ulrich. Which one of those do you think wrote that solo? And the other guy will say something like, that sounds like a Lars lick or something to that effect. Or that bass line is so Hetfield, which James does write a lot of bass lines.
Yeah.
He says, anyhow, I thought that you guys might have some insight on this being professional musicians. I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't think that they have a specific rhyme or reason, first of all. Like, I don't think they have an equation for it. It's always going to be Hetfield Ulrich because James is writing all the riffs. And, you know, Lars taking all of that information and composing it, in my opinion, 100% qualifies him as a writer.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, yeah, arranging, like it's very, very well known that he is like the master arranger of Metallica songs. And that is a huge part of the writing process, too.
Whereas, like, if someone came into a co-write I was doing in Nashville and said, hey, man, that song you guys wrote is cool. I think you should do a second chorus after the bridge. I might say, that's a good idea. We're going to do it. I'm not giving that motherfucker writing credit. So just so you know, there's a difference between like, oh, I think we should do two choruses. I think we should do a third verse here. What Lars is doing is way more involved than that.
Well, he's also there from pretty much the inception of the song, too.
Well, he's the one who gets, you know, when he talks about when they made Hardwired, he says he got an iPod with like 600 riffs on it.
Yeah.
And he's the one who goes through and says, I want these. And if you watch the making of Hardwire, there's even one of the tunes, he's sitting down. I think it's when they're doing Moth, actually. And he's sitting down with a notebook where he has made all these notes. And he's saying, and, you know, their riffs have names, like the Pile Driver and Chi Town or whatever. And he's like, I think we need, I mean, he really kind of writes it. He really does have a lot to do with it, more than just saying it should be verse, chorus, verse, verse, chorus.
Right, right. Exactly.
Now, Kirk Hammett has some solos that I think would necessitate him having writing credit, but they don't do that. They do not give him credit for writing solos.
Yeah, and maybe it has a lot to do with it, you know, I mean, I'm sure sometimes he writes lead stuff like on his own and then tries to fit into songs, but as we've seen in a lot of like footage of making of albums, he does a lot of improvising to make up his solos.
Right.
And to create them. And so it's kind of like, okay, you're just coming in and essentially, and this is no discredit to Kirk, but you're coming in and kind of just improvising over what we've already worked hard on. So does it constitute for some writer's credit on there? You know, I get it.
I think Kirk gets writing credit when he contributes riffs.
Yeah.
And maybe that is one of their like boundaries on it. It's like, it's got to be a riff. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, hopefully that sheds some light on it. Every band's a little different with that. You know, we mentioned on a previous episode that bands like Radiohead, and I think Coldplay does it too, everyone in the band's given the same writing credit, same publishing.
Yeah, it's just split evenly.
Because sometimes the you know, if you got a bass player and a drummer, usually a drummer, in the case of Metallica, it's not true, but like take, if you got a bass player and drummer that aren't the principal songwriters and things are really happening with that band in terms of publishing, you have a pretty serious discrepancy between what the halves of the band are getting paid.
Yeah.
And that can usually destroy a band.
It can destroy a band, or sometimes it can really like glue a band together because, you know, it's almost like incentive for the guys that maybe aren't great writers, but they're putting in their energy and their talents in so many other places that maybe they feel it's warranted to have an even split.
Well, I've also known people who part of their publishing deal was they had to write like 98% of the stuff. So there was this great Birmingham band called Wayne, and the publishing deal was the lead singer was the only one that had the publishing deal. So he even had to be responsible. If there were like hooky drums,
yeah,
he had to write those parts.
Wow.
It was just a stipulation of his publishing deal. So it's kind of a grab bag, you know? It just depends.
Yeah.
He says, oh, and one more thing. I think there's some potential for an animated series sometimes starring Torben, Vegan Ethan, Hulk Hogan, Turner Duckworth, and the Valley Girls. And, of course, Dave, even though Dave sometimes slips into a weird Marge Simpson impersonation.
Homer!
I can easily explain that. It's because I suck at doing impersonations. He says, although he sounds like Marge, he's still a vital part of the show. Maybe they could all be doing a behind-the-music type thing where they're recording an album with Paul Moak, like the supergroup show that VH1 did a few years back. Just a thought. Keep up the good work. Much love and respect for what you're doing. And Ethan, if you like my idea, say totally at some point during the show so I'll know. Cheers, Mike.
Totally.
There you go.
It's approved.
Thanks, Mike. I hope we answered your question.
Yeah, I hope. Yeah, or if anybody else listening was curious about that kind of stuff, I mean, it still confuses me sometimes, and I've been in this business for a long time.
I think that Death Magnetic, because every band member has credit on every song, I think that was a deliberate move.
Right.
I think that was a move for morale.
I think so too.
So then you do that too, right? Like, there's sometimes it's determined by things other than who's really actually working on shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, all right, thanks, Mike. Thanks for listening, dude.
All right, and our last email is from Ben Sauza. I think I'm getting that right.
Yeah.
Ben says, hello from Chico, California. That's New Jersey.
Yes.
Chico's an awesome city. I love it there. He says, my name is Ben S., and I truly want to say thank you for all your hard work. My commute to and from work has been the highlight of my day for the last few weeks. I started with the Load podcast and have been hooked ever since. A lot of people came in on that episode. That's cool.
We hooked you, Ben. We got you, Ben.
Yeah, we got you, man. It's so true that when you're a fan of this band, it really becomes family. Keep up the good work. Second runner-up band for him is Faith No More. That's cool. A great second runner-up.
Yep, great band.
If you ever need a recharge and you're on the road, look me up. I've also been in a traveling band in my 20s, and I know it's like to have a warm meal and a safe place to hang your hat for the night. Well, that's very generous of you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Yeah, and I could think of a million worse places to be than Chico. Chico's awesome.
Yeah, and it's what I love about it is it's right by Manhattan. You just take a train, take the NJT right over to the island.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's great.
All right, let's talk about Quebec Magnetic.
Let's do it.
I love that cover of it with the M logo, but it looks like it's like going right into James Hetfield's.
Yeah,
neck.
It's really cool. Really cool.
Pretty badass.
Yeah, this is a fun one. And it was fun to rewatch it because I only ever seen it one other time. But you know, ever since we started this and then have gone to a couple shows, like I can't get enough of live footage of them now.
No, it's great.
There was a point where like, you know, because like S&M came out and it was like, that to me is like such an amazing live record they've done. And it's so great to watch and stuff, but I feel like I'm just diving in now, like looking up stuff and like, I've seen a lot of the old, you know, early days footage and stuff like that. But I just got really stoked to watch this, man. It's like, especially like I said earlier, like just having like headphones on and just focusing on it. Like there was moments where I got chills. There was even a moment where I kind of like got emotional when James was doing Nothing Else Matters by himself. I was like, God, I'm so into this band.
That's pretty cool, dude. Yeah. Someone was asking me that. My friend Bob Schneider was actually asking me the other day how the podcast was going. And I was like, man, I've always been a Metallica fan. That's why we decided to do this shit. But we're in so deep now. It's such a big part of my week, like just every day that it's just really giving me kind of an emotional charge too about the
band. For sure.
I'm pretty emotional about it too. And I think one of the things that's really cool about Quebec Magnetic is that, I mean, there's a 100% deficiency of Death Magnetic songs on the World Wired tour.
Yeah.
So it's just nice. I mean, they did like six tunes from Death Magnetic on this DVD.
It was so cool. Yeah. And just so everyone is, aware, we're talking about like the main DVD, not the bonus stuff. We will run through that real quick, but
yeah, the bonus. So it was filmed over two nights. Well, I mean, let's just go ahead and do the facts. Here are the facts.
All right. Facts.
It was filmed by Wayne Isham, which Wayne Isham did Enter Sandman, did Saboteur. He's a director who's worked with them before. And they recorded it on Halloween, October 31st and November 1st at the Colisée Pepsi in Quebec City, Canada. And I think they recorded it in 2009, but released it on December 11th, 2012. Double DVD, single disc, Blu-ray. And it was the first one that they released under their own label, Blacken Recording,
yep.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
That means that they have complete freedom of the music and the video output that they put out. There's no label acting as a bank. There's no one that they're obligated to. They put up the money, and they get to do whatever the fuck they want.
Exactly.
And I think it's why they did so many. Like, they did, I think they made three DVDs from the World Magnetic Tour.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Mexico City one, I think Nimes, and then this one.
Yep.
So, and then, so it's pulled from these two shows, and fans got to vote online to decide which of the two shows would be shown in their entirety. And then the bonus disc has kind of what that wasn't on the disc one. So we're going to mostly be talking about disc one.
Yeah.
It sold 14,000 copies in its first week. It charted at number 2 on the Billboard Top Music Video chart. I tried to find what was number 1 and could not find that information.
Oh, weird. It's probably the best of the Eagles, the videos or something.
It's everything that's number 1 is just Eagles.
Actually, it was probably the Jethro Tull videos collection.
Oh my God. You know what? It probably was that.
Yeah, let's just say it was.
I think it's cool that they let the fans kind of vote on it, you know?
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, we've talked about so many times that they're a very fan-friendly band, and this is just another you know, notch on the old belt for them.
I think it's why we ended up with shit like Short of Straw and Four Horsemen and stuff.
Yeah, God, I was so excited when Short of Straw started.
But, dude, there is great stuff. So here's what's on the bonus disc. So these are the songs that they played in those two nights but aren't on the main disc. For Whom the Bell Tolls, Holier Than Thou, which I love.
Yeah.
Cyanide, which is cool, whatever. Turn the Page, All Nightmare Long, which is probably my favorite song on Death Magnetic. Damage Inc.
That's rad.
Bread Fan, Phantom, and Phantom Lord, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, Phantom Lord is cool. I think I would what song am I thinking of that they did on the main disc from Death Magnetic? I wasn't super stoked on. I don't love the song.
Well, I know you love My Apocalypse, but that was the low point for me. You're probably thinking about Broke, Beat, and Scarred.
No, I like Broken, Beat, and Scarred a lot.
Judas Kiss.
That's I was drawing a blank.
I love that one.
It's a cool song, but I would much rather have something else that was, you know, they put on the bonus disc. But whatever, it was still a fucking great show.
There was a poll on the forums this week of what do you think their worst song live is? Not what their worst song is, but the one that just doesn't work live. And so many people said the Judas Kiss.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's really cool parts in the song, but I totally get it. But I do love how much Death Magnetic Love was on this DVD, and obviously it's because they were touring that record at the time, but it was just cool to hear those live since we haven't heard them, you know, play those songs on this tour.
And we're going to get into it because we're going to kind of go through the set list. They were so tight on these shows, dude.
Yeah, they all sounded great.
Because the Death Magnetic material is really tough material.
Yeah.
For those of you who play guitar out there, I know there are a lot of you that do. Those tunes are long, complicated, and fast.
Yeah, totally. That'll burn up your wrists.
So to kind of have a show that's mostly that material. So another thing I'll mention on the bonus disc was there's a Quebec City Love Letters featuring Metallica and Fan Interviews. I could not find that, so I don't really know. I don't know what that is. Am I fired? Am I gone?
I think you are.
Clint's just fucking annoying. He hasn't even seen disc 2.
He couldn't even find the interview thing.
You know what he did? He couldn't even see disc 2.
Should we burn the set list down?
Yeah, let's do it, because we each made our separate notes while watching this, and we'll be interjecting those thoughts as we go through the set list.
I like on during Ecstasy, it's kind of showing montages of the band backstage, and there's like a real sweet moment where Rob and James hug.
Totally. Yeah, and really good shots of the city and stuff.
Yeah, really, really pretty black and white shots of the city. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's not going to win an Oscar, but it's nice footage.
Yeah, very nice.
It reminds me of the kind of goodbye, thank you, city montage videos that we see on the World Wire Tour at every show.
I thought the same thing.
Which I think they've been doing that since Black Album. But anyway, so they open with, and dude, you forget what a cool opener this is, but they open with That Was Just Your Life, and the track they play is that heartbeat.
Yeah, they do like the you know, the tape, they call it. Yeah, it was really cool. And it's just another one of those good Metallica intros that kind of builds suspense and stuff. And what I loved about this track, or this, it's, you know, point in the set, the opening song, I love the lighting on this because it's like really, really dark. And
there's
then,
only one light on James.
One light on James, and it's only when he's singing, and it's super creepy. And then when the song comes to an end, they hit the last thing. Like every light comes on in the entire building, and it's it, like I, it literally it just gave me chills talking about it because it's that beautiful looking to me.
And for you kids out there who are paying attention, what do we call that thing at the end of the song where Lars just hits the cymbals for a long time? All together now, we call that a trash can ending. I did think about that, though, because Kirk really nailed... I mean, all right, let's go ahead and say this, too. These official live recordings, they're doctored, all right? They overdose shit. They fix shit. There's some continuity errors we're even going to talk about later where James is playing different guitars during the same song.
Yeah, you're also talking about what Clint just said, and you know, it's two different shows they're editing together. It's
two different shows, right? So when I praise a guitar solo or praise Lars's meticulous drumming, spare me they probably touched that up. I don't know exactly what the details are, but I know that happens, right? So having said that, got that out of the way. Kirk kicks ass on the solo, and he plays it all in the goddamn dark. They don't ever put a light on him.
I know.
Like, just as a performer where I've been on some really dark decks before where you can't see shit. It's like, this is a problem. I can't see.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, watching it, you know, on your TV, laptop, whatever, I'm sure he had enough light where he could see. I mean, clearly he did. I mean, he played it, you know, the solo great.
Right.
You know, it's probably, the video's probably edited to look where, like, it's even darker. But, I mean, I saw this tour and it was fucking dark. But when you're on stage, like, you know, like, I, you know, when I'm on stage, you know, getting ready for Kings of Leon to come on, it's like, it's pretty dark up there. And it's probably way darker looking to the from the crowd's perspective. But for me, it's like, I can still look down and see a guitar or whatever.
Well, what's cool about this DVD and this, because I totally immediately, like, was like, this was a stylistic choice that they did this, right? Because they're not moving around much. James is only on the same mic the whole song, which is unusual for him. But, It's in stark contrast to the way Cunning Stunts is, because Cunning Stunts, they come out and all the house lights are on.
Yeah.
And they play So What, and then when they hit the last trash can on So What, all the lights go off.
Yeah, that's and then yeah, they do, equally
and then
as
they
cool.
do creep and then they do Creeping Death, which is pretty badass too.
Yeah. No, that's equally as cool too. I just love that, like, and the crowd even felt that energy, like when all those lights came on at the end of this, like the whole crowd goes crazy.
They've been playing That Was Just Your Life and The End of the Line. They've been playing some Death Magnetic stuff a lot in the tuning room on this current tour. I think they're just getting it all cooked up for Europe.
Which would be awesome. I would love to, you know, start seeing videos of that popping up online when they're over in Europe playing some Death Magnetic stuff.
And just like the record, they go from That Was Just Your Life into The End of the Line, which is a great live song, dude.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just like what they're doing right now on the Hardwired tour.
Yeah, because they're going right from Hardwired into Atlas, right?
Yep.
Pretty smart move. I mean, when you decide the sequence of a record, a lot of really meticulous thought goes into that. So it makes sense that you would kind of follow a similar pattern live.
Yeah, totally.
Although they could come out and open with a lot of these songs, dude. They could come out and open with A Day That Never Comes, even.
Gotta love that song.
Or they could open up with My Apocalypse. Because we'll get to My Apocalypse. How about that weird instrumental before My Apocalypse?
It was cool.
Did you make notes about that? Really cool.
It's very cool. I'm pretty sure I'm going to sound like a freaking amateur Metallica fan here, but isn't that like on the record at the end of it or something?
Well, it's like a tape. You hear like a tape of bells, and so I thought they were going to play For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Right, right.
And then it's like this kind of interesting melody, like a piano.
It's something that I've heard before, and maybe I'll just have to revisit that record.
You're fired.
And maybe I'm completely wrong and off the track here, but...
Ethan, you're fired.
I'm the best at firing people.
My Trump is kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You're fired. It's not a tumor.
You're fired. California.
California. Come with me if you want to live.
Get to the chopper.
Oh my God.
You son Arnold. Of a bitch.
I'm trying to think of a good quote from True Lies, because that's a great one.
I haven't seen that one in a while.
Oh man. All right. So I made this note. I talked about this on the same, on the Death Magnetic, the same moment, but that drop the hourglass of time, spilling sand we will not find.
Yeah.
That is such a great bridge.
Oh, it's awesome. It's really good.
And live, when they do it here on the Quebec Magnetic DVD, they put all this really great delay and reverb on it. Because it's a little dry on the record.
Yeah, yeah.
But they really kind of fuck it up on this version, and I love it.
I think it sounds awesome.
It's so smooth.
It's also really fun to hear the Death Magnetic songs, honestly, sounding, you know, quality-wise, better than the record.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the Justice songs are very much so like that.
Yeah, totally.
But dude, that, and they climb that thing.
Yep.
Man, great riffs. I love the end of the line.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to bring up too is on That Was Just Your Life. We've talked about how kind of jumbled Hetfield's vocals are on the verses. And we kind of wish that last verse is how he sang all of them.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that bothered me about this version of the song was that I felt like they were playing it too fast and it made his vocals even more jumbled.
Yeah, yeah. Because when you're playing live, your adrenaline's pumping. You tend to play a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And James was also the first song or two. He's singing really pretty clean. I feel like he's probably just kind of getting his voice warmed up more.
Well, and two, man, go learn that riff. That main That Was Just Your Life riff is really hard to play that consistently. And he's trying to sing all that over it and remember all the words.
Yeah.
So he gets a pass from me, but I agree. I don't like it really to begin with, and then when it's a little too fast, it really pokes out.
For sure.
But that like a touch from hell to feel how hot, that shit is great.
Oh, it's amazing.
He has room to breathe, and there's more of a melody. It's not barky.
Yeah, totally.
But then again, barky's kind of what Death Magnetic was about. It's about going back to the bark stuff.
Yep.
Speaking of going back, he does the whole, we make each other feel better, and we're going to do it right now with some old stuff. And when you're thinking, what's it going to be? And it's the Four Horsemen, which I think is awesome.
Four Horsemen, wasn't it? You're right. Yeah. Sorry, I was jumping ahead mentally to Short of Straw.
Always jumping ahead, man.
I know. I read ahead. I'm just a fucking
be in
asshole.
The moment, homie.
Trying to.
All right. I think Four Horsemen's cool though. It doesn't get enough love.
I agree. Yeah, they've done it. You know, obviously they've played that song a lot, but in the recent years they really haven't. You know, they're kind of sticking to a couple from Kill 'Em All recently. It's one of my favorite, if not my favorite track off of that record. So I was stoked that this was in the Quebec set list.
In the Quebec queue? In the queue of Quebec?
Yep.
I intentionally did not look at the set list when I was burning this down because I wanted to be surprised by it.
Oh, nice.
So it was a nice moment for me. And this is the first guitar. I'm going to talk about guitar changes. First guitar change of the night. James has, he doesn't play the guitar much either. It's a kind of a gray burst Explorer.
It's the classic silver burst, they call it.
Right, a silver burst.
Yeah, I actually I forgot about that. And when I was watching it, I actually paused it because at first, because of the lighting.
It looks almost, like tobacco. Look at the tobacco burst, right?
It's a tobacco burst. And then shortly after that, you know, the lights kind of come up and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a silver burst Explorer, which is so badass looking.
It looks great. He doesn't play it a lot though.
I know.
And Kirk is actually playing one of his horror guitars that he does not play a lot. He's playing the Bride of Frankenstein guitar.
Yeah, that one's cool.
Because he does the Dracula one a lot. Does the Mummy one's probably his most famous one.
Or the White Zombie one.
You're right, the White Zombie one. Yeah. Another just reminder, burning this song down, is just how catchy that chorus is, and it's one of the first songs I ever wrote.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy is because Dave Mustaine has writing credit on that song, he made money off this DVD.
For sure. So, anytime they do that stuff, I mean, Dave's getting paid.
Oh, yeah. If there's anything that is released like this, yeah, anybody with writing credit is going to make some money.
I don't know if someone sent it to me, but I saw it's an interview with Mustaine, and he's talking to he's talking to a journalist that didn't really do their research.
Yeah.
And they're like, your new record, people are going to, I think it's around Black Album time, because I guess Megadeth made kind of a sludgy groove metal record like the Black Album. What was that called?
Countdown to Extinction.
And they're like, people are going to be drawing comparisons to you and Metallica. Have you given any thought to that? And Dave Mustaine's like, anyone with half a brain knows that we've been compared to Metallica for our entire careers and that I was in Metallica and a big part of what they started. And he's just so pissed off that she doesn't really know anything about
that. He was so, I mean, wouldn't you?
Oh, for sure. For 100%.
Especially Mustaine was in the thick of he was a pretty dark dude back then and pretty angry still. But
well, because he was on the H train, right? Or was he on drugs?
He did every drug.
Right.
He did all of them.
Shit, he even did voodoo. He did black magic shit.
Yeah. Blacktooth grins.
Well, that's a Pantera thing.
Yeah, but I think they partook as well because there is a Megadeth song where I think, isn't it on Sweating Bullets? Smile, my black tooth grin.
Oh, really? Well, you know the only lyric I know to that song.
Hello, me, meet the real me. I'm Dave Mustaine.
Well,
Wedding Boys.
That's all I know. I love that song, though.
No, listen to the rest of the song. He references a Blacktooth grin in it.
Blacktooth, my palms are sweating.
That song is so ridiculous. He's ridiculous, but good. I'll sometimes watch live versions of Sweating Bullets. Like I'll watch like 10 or 15 of them in a row.
Yeah.
Oh, like what was it like in 2009? Oh, how was he doing it in 2014?
Exactly.
What was it like when it was written? All right, so we get the Four Horsemen. It's a treat. Rob kind of tries to do the die thing that Jason does in the turnaround, and it doesn't really work.
I didn't mind it.
But it's not that, man. When Jason did it, you just believed
not,
it.
Again, it's just not Jason. I mean, Jason had like a good that gang vocal kind of sound to his voice.
Right.
Really growly and stuff. But I know what you're saying.
This is the first time in the show where the caskets, which are so badass, these death magnetic caskets that are also lights and have lasers, they come down to like right above the dude's heads on the deck.
Yeah, it's
really
and
cool.
And if like me, you saw that tour live, it was even cooler to see in person. And I'm surprised you didn't really see it on the DVD, but there was actually video projection in those when I saw it.
Yeah.
So every once in a while you'd look up and you'd see like a body laying in or whatever. Yeah. And it was
you
so
can
cool.
See, you can see that really well in the Through the Never film.
Yeah.
There's like a dude in there trying to get out and all that stuff. It's really cool. Then we get what I thought was another treat. We get the Shortest Straw.
This might be one of the highlights for me of this show.
They're real tight. That intro is, we talked about it on our Justice episode about how kind of strange the timing is.
Yeah.
And they are tight.
Oh, they had it down for sure. And it's one of my favorite songs on that record too.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of it. And you know, being able to hear the low end, like I think here's what was my takeaway watching The Shortest Straw is that sonically with the band, it sounds better than Justice, but I feel like those Justice songs, you got to have that 1988 Hetfield anger voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The,
for sure.
The smooth James doesn't really work on those songs as well. It does on one and Harvester, like the slower jams.
Yeah.
But Shortest Straw is kind of missing that angry, thinner voice, James.
Yeah. I mean, and we talked about this too. I mean, it's like you get older, you know, you can't sing like that your whole life. I mean,
right.
There's
for sure.
Very, very few singers that can do that for a long time.
Yeah. For sure.
And you've got to save your voice if you're doing a 2.5 hour show.
I mean, James is definitely doing what he has to do for it all to be good and to preserve and to be able to go to the next city and do the same thing.
Yep.
I got nothing but love for it. I just miss that growl of 88.
Of course, yeah. Everybody does.
Speaking of the growl, I have a note here that says, Kirk's Cookie Monster vocals, ha ha, straw!
Straw! Yeah, we most people know we've never really been fans of Kirk's backing vocals.
Straw! Like, I guess they had to decide, like, we'll take that over Nothing, but I think Nothing might have been the better avenue to go down.
Yeah,
Just don't worry about it, Kirk.
Yeah.
Solo was pretty cool. A little sloppy Joe, but not in a way that bothered me. It felt live. It felt live to me.
Yeah, felt real.
They feel like a band.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was great. The crowd was going crazy for it. And I do love that they kind of did how they started the show. And they do two songs off of Justice here. They do Shortest Straw into one.
Yeah.
It's weird really to cool. see one that early in the set, too.
Super weird. Because you know, that's when they kind of unveil some of their pyro game, too.
Yeah. Which is always cool.
We're used on
cool.
this current tour of seeing it at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was super early and I don't know. I dug it though. It was just kind of a nice surprise, I think. You know, especially coming out of Shortest Straw.
You know what bothers me about Kirk's like really thin, clean tone? I think what really like contrasts it to me is that I love James's clean tone so much. It's so big and round.
Yeah.
Little chorusy, kind of little cheesy chorusy, but it's like epic sounding. And then you get Kirk coming in and it's like dry, compressed.
Heavily over compressed.
Like super compressed, right?
It just sounds. It almost. I made a note here that it's between this and when he does one of his doodles. It's in a clean tone. It kind of like, especially when he messes something up. It almost makes it sound like one of those Shreds videos.
I totally agree. It's almost like a joke.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could adjust his tone.
I wish I could just put a little bit of verb and maybe even a little bit of like some hall verb and a little bit of delay on it.
Maybe a little
nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy. A little less compression. A little more gain. Slightly.
Yeah. Come on.
Kirk, are you listening?
What the heck? But he does kick ass in the rest of the song. That middle solo, he really kicks ass on. And the guitar harmony and the ending solo thing, he's great on.
Oh, yeah. When we talked about earlier about releases like this, people going back in the studio and doctoring things up and doing some overdubs, I feel like they probably did that with the Machine Gun drum part for Lars.
I agree.
It's pretty it's pretty damn awesome.
Although I will say the guitars are a little sloppy in that moment.
A little bit.
Which, I like because it's made it seem real, but you think they might have touched up the drums?
I mean, if I had to put money down on it, I'd say they did, just because, you know, having watched footage of them over the years, he's fairly sloppy at it most of the time.
Yeah. I actually have a note here that this is the first time we do see the screens on the bottoms of the caskets. I can't remember what the images were, though.
Okay, I was just focused on old Roberto.
Oh, I can't keep my eyes off of thee, Roberto. thine crab walk does allure me. And James does this, how many times have you guys seen Metallica thing? And while James is doing that, I use the word prowl because there's no better word for it. Lars is just prowling the stage.
He does prowl the stage.
Hands behind his back, just prowling like a little meerkat.
Yep.
Would you say meerkat is the appropriate animal?
I'd say a meerkat is. Well, a meerkat kind of just sticks his head up and stands there and looks around.
Oh.
I feel like he, I mean, they cruise and stuff, but whatever. Let's call him a meerkat. Old meerkat Lars.
Whatever, they cruise and stuff.
I mean, most of the time you see meerkats.
Meerkat? You cruising?
They kind of just stick their head up and they're looking around like all concerned, you know?
But his speech is like borderline cheese, but then he goes to the, he's talking about you're a family and we're a family and all that matters is that we're here now. And he does the, together we do great things because what don't kill you make you more strong.
Yeah.
And then they go into broken, beaten, scarred. And it's grammatically that sentence makes no sense, but it's so fun and good. And that song rocks.
Yeah, the song rocks. I will say that's my least favorite line from that record. But
me too.
The rest of the song is so good, I think, that it helps me to ignore it.
James is playing this like weird, like rusty, like metal, but it's rusted out Les Paul.
It's cool.
Do you know what that is?
I think it's just another custom ESP he had. I've seen that one a bit.
He played it a lot in the World Magnetic Tour. He plays it a lot on the Death Magnetic tunes.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't remember seeing it in the making of Death Magnetic, so I wonder if he got it afterwards.
I'm not sure. I do love Robert playing a P bass, though. He brought that on one.
I made that note, too. He plays a P bass.
Yeah, a few times in the set, and I really dig it. Because I'm not a fan of the Warwicks he plays. I think they're just goofy looking.
Yeah, I mean,
they sound good.
They sound good. But yeah, I agree. They don't. When he plays that P bass, it looks cool.
I mean, on Judas Kiss, Kirk plays a guitar that sounds good, but we'll get to that.
So this is the first time I notice a continuity error. Is there's a shot of James. So James is playing this guitar we're talking about, right? It's a Les Paul. But I think in the first verse, there are like edits to him, and he's playing an Explorer.
Yeah.
Which is no big deal. It's just funny to notice that shit.
It's just, it's the same thing like whenever I'm watching a TV show and there's like a band scene, like if someone's at a club or whatever, and like there's something that's off, like the drummer's, in the song it's on a hi-hat, and then in the scene in the TV show or what movie or whatever, he's playing the ride cymbal. That stuff has always kind of bugged me.
Yeah, because it's like, get it right, because it's the people who are editing it aren't musicians.
Right.
So it's just like approximate it, but yeah, it bugs me too.
I mean, again, this is a kick-ass show. It doesn't bug me that much.
Right. I'm not like throwing everything in my hotel room into the pool. Not yet. So I have more BGV's notes because this is I thought this was interesting. It's because it's the rise, you fall, rise again. What don't kill you make you more strong. And Kirk and Rob are doing it, and it's still not really great. And I wrote the note. It takes Rob and Kirk to really only half accomplish what Jason was able to do by himself.
Yeah, I agree.
Again, okay,
Jason just had a very, very powerful voice. I think Kirk is just timid when he goes up to the microphone.
Dude, in one of the bands I toured with called Dugas, French-Canadian rock band, our drummer was an amazing singer, like just an amazing singer.
Yeah.
But he ended up having to leave the band, so all the BGVs fell on me and the bass player. Bass player, great singer. Me, pretty good singer. And we couldn't cover what this dude did just because he had such a powerful voice.
Yeah, some people are like that, man.
Like, I've definitely been in Kirk and Rob's shoes on this, so I don't say it with any malice. I actually understand it, but... he does the Quebec Dies Hard chorus.
Yeah.
bring the town into it.
You gotta insert city name here kind of thing.
When they do the last little sting, Lars hops off the kit and does the fist pump.
He does it a lot in this one. And in my mind, it's almost like you just got a hole in one on the golf course.
Right.
To me, it's almost like, oh, fuck, I got through the song. Thank God. Yes.
And then they kind of just double down on Death Magnetic and Do My Apocalypse. Now, I was getting excited for Whom the Bell Tolls because they play that tape of Bells. And then I was like, oh, this is My Apocalypse. That's cool. I dig this. But to me, it's the one dip in the show.
Yeah,
it's like an energy dip for such a thrashy song. It's kind of an energy dip, right?
I would say for me that Judas Kiss would be the low point of the show for me. But yeah. I mean, I love My Apocalypse. It's one of my top tracks on that record.
Yeah. James does do a cool speech at the end of it where he talks about Volbeat and Lamb of God, and he talks about them carrying the torch for heavy music, and
yeah, that was very cool.
And he says they're turning into road dogs like us.
Yeah, road dogs.
I thought was pretty cool. Then he does You Want Heavy, Talica gives you Heavy Baby, and then we get Sabbath True.
Yeah. It is crazy, though. Like, up until this point, we only have Death Magnetic songs, one from Justice, and then we have Four Horsemen from Kill 'Em All.
Two from Justice.
Oh, sorry, two from Justice. You're right. So, but three records, and most of it is the new record at the time, which is, I just thought it's cool. They're just giving that album so much love.
Yeah, you know, they were just really excited. Yeah, they were excited about it. It comes through to me.
Oh, yeah. They look really happy playing the songs. They're comfortable playing them.
And Savage, yeah, Sabbath True is the first Black album cut. James playing a D-Tune Explorer. Kirk on his Jackson V. Coffin's Come Back Down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this song, the argument that it's overplayed, I get it. But I love hearing this song.
I do, too.
Especially live. It's great.
Oh, it's a great song. When we were in Detroit together and they played this song, we were going crazy, having a great time singing every word. And
it was interesting to see that James does that detuning thing at the end that we saw on the World Wire tour.
And Rob does it.
Yeah, he's like pedaling and tuning it down.
Rob's is cool because he's obviously that huge deep bass tone and just keeps rumbling lower and lower and lower.
So then lights go out. They play Sabbath True. It's great. It's the great Sabbath True that we all know and love. Dark Deck, and I still don't know what's coming, and then I hear those harmonics to Sanitarium, and my first thought was, oh, Ethan's going to love this part.
Yep. I completely love this part, you know, especially having, since we've recently seen the band a couple times, and they're not playing it on this tour.
Yeah.
It's one of my top tracks on Puppets, and so right. I can't get sick of this song.
And I do love it when Kirk plays those Les Paul customs.
Yep.
He tends to do that on some of these ballads. I know he does it on Fade to Black. He does it on Sanitarium. He does it on Nothing Else Matters.
Yeah.
I love when those dudes play Les Pauls.
Yeah, you do.
Because they don't really seem like metal guitar. Like, a lot of metal cats don't like, they're not pointy enough or something, but.
They don't look like they could kill you or you could stab somebody with it.
If you accidentally fell on it, it would impale you. Whoops. I fell on my Explorer.
Oh, shoot. Guess I'm dead.
I guess I gotta go to the hospital. And Kirk rips in the song, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he totally does. He does a great job on it.
There are several during the kind of fast bridge stuff.
Yeah.
I'd noticed several circle pits forming.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of circle pit footage on this one.
Guess how scared I'm going to be at an arena show if that shit happens around me. Real scared.
Here's the thing, man. Circle pit is one thing. If you're literally just running in a circle, it looks bitching from stage to the band. When people start like throwing their arms around like a fucking windmill, nope. Then I'm out. It's annoying as shit because all of a sudden you're having a great time and then a fist hits you in the nose. And you know what? Maybe that's metal and I'm not as metal, but I don't want to be fucking hit in the face at a show and have a good time and enjoy the show.
Dude, I don't think it's metal. I think it's fucking stupid.
Hey, if you haven't done it, you can't come to that conclusion yet.
Yeah, I did it when I was a dumbass kid. I did.
I staged it over one time in my life and no one caught me, and that was the last time I ever did that.
I've done it too. Done it too. Yeah. It sucks.
It totally sucks.
It's not like the movies, kids.
Yeah, it's not like the movies. All right. I do like on is Sabbath True, is he playing the Black and White Explorer?
Or is it on? Yeah, no, he was. Yeah.
Okay.
He normally plays a really cool Black Explorer that has like tread on it.
Yeah.
Or like that metal cross thing.
And lately it's the camo one.
And lately he's playing the camo snake bite, which this is all pre-snake bite. We don't see a single snake bite in this show.
Yeah, you're right. And then there was a couple of ESPs that were like the exact copy of Gibson's too.
Yep. Oh, I actually thought they were Gibson. So those were ESPs. I couldn't see
that. Well, no, I actually paused it a couple times. I think the Silverburst was a Gibson.
Yeah.
And the black and white one was a was an ESP.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
James looks good with those offset guitars, man.
Yeah, he does. Damn it, I got to get an Explorer someday.
I do too. I got to get a fucking Snakebite. God damn it.
ESP, you listening?
ESP LTD. All right, so then we get the Judas Kiss. Now, I thought it was fascinating that they have an intro tape for this, because they had like a, they leave the deck and there's like a tape playing of the intro. Like, I wonder if they were maybe cooking up trying to open with it.
Maybe. I mean, but they've been doing that, you know, like on other songs like Battery, things like that.
Right.
I kind of like the intro tape thing. I thought it was weird at first, but I dig it because it you know, it builds excitement into what the, you know, the song that's coming, obviously, but. Yeah, I dig it, man.
And it gives them a break to hop off stage and get some water or, like, you know, wipe the sweat off their face.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's just a cool moment. Like, you're right. It builds tension. It's one of my favorite Death Magnetic tunes. We got to talk about Kirk's weird-ass guitar.
Oh, my gosh. That thing.
So if you've seen this, you know it's a very, very strange. It's called the Teffler Bird.
Teffel?
It's really hard to say, and they don't have it very clearly up on their website.
What they do have clearly on their website is how atrocious these things look.
Oh, and it's called a birdfish.
Yeah, a birdfish. And, I mean, the second I saw this guitar on Kirk, my first thought was, like, what are those two little, like, cylinders on top of the guitar? I thought, like, pyro was going to come out of them, like,
yeah,
flames
something. They look like weapons.
It's the weirdest shit. I don't...
It's like a German custom thing.
This looks like something that you see at the NAMM show and you walk by and like, have a good laugh.
Because it's
like,
ridiculous. Right?
That's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I wonder what the... he's never really talked much about it, but
it
wonder...
It sounded awesome.
It does. And you know what else is really weird is it's got a maple fretboard, which for those of... Like, maple fretboard is the light-colored wood fretboard. Rosewood or ebony are usually the dark ones. It's weird to see Kirk playing a maple fretboard, because I realize I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's really weird. This definitely was a point in the show that kind of had me turning my head a little bit, like, what in the hell is that thing? Now, when I saw them in Australia...
Wouldn't you say that in that sense, it's kind of succeeding? It's easily the most talked about thing of this song. Not the song, not the guitar solo. It's like, that guitar, what is that? Guitar.
I mean, I guess we are promoting that company right now, but I just think their guitars, I would never buy one of these things.
And they don't have a headstock. Like, it's very German.
Yeah, yeah. It's very not cool.
What were those famous...
Steinbergers.
Steinbergers that famously didn't have headstocks.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Did you recycle the joke yet?
I don't remember what I said.
God, it was so good. Ethan, right before we started rolling, Ethan... As usual, we're like talking about Metallica and shit. And these days, I've gotten good at being like, save it for the show, save it for the show. And then he had this great joke about this guitar.
They're called, I pronounced it T-U-ful, and I said they're T-awful.
Yeah.
It's good so one, bad. Ethan. Comedy Horde inserted here.
There you go. It's so bad, it's good. Man, to disagree with you and lots of other people, I thought the song was great live, and I thought it was a really, the weird time signature stuff was cool. I thought the solo was really well played.
I don't think they played it bad by any means. It's not one of my favorite songs from that record.
Yeah, that's okay. Hey man, that's okay, man.
Is there a baby dying in your house right now?
Can you hear that?
All I hear is baby coughing.
My baby's here, and. And then my wife's best friend's, her kid is my kid's age, and they're in another room hanging.
Little play date?
Yeah, a little play date.
Aww.
We might, my daughter might come guest on the show and let us know what she thinks about the Judas Kiss here in a minute.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Then we get a Kirk Doodle, which he's playing this red Gibson V. I love it when he plays those Gibson Vs, too.
I do, too. I'm not a huge fan of Kirk's Doodles. I mean, in the last, I would say, 15 years... He needs a little more effect on his guitar. I think it's a little dry. So you can kind of hear, like, you know, a lot of times, you know, when you're just a guitar player playing a solo for a crowd and it's that dry, it's like you, even the tiniest little mistake or even just the way you're hitting your pick against the strings can make you sound like you're worse than you are.
Right.
And so, you know, little ketchup and mustard on there wouldn't hurt anybody.
It's very, very unforgiving.
Yeah, it is. So it kind of bored me, to be honest.
Yeah, well, lucky for you, then it's pretty short. Like it's not a long doodle. We get the dark stage again, and then we get the day that never comes, which is a beautiful version of it too.
And you know what? I feel like those, especially James on this song. You know, sometimes musicians talk about, you know, when you're playing a song, like you're in the moment and it like kind of takes you over,
right?
And you forget what's around you and you're just playing it and your eyes are closed or whatever. Like I felt that way while watching James play this song. It was almost like he was at a church service or something, you know?
Well, it is cool when they drew in that intro and it does pan over to him. He's kind of leaning on the cabs, like eyes closed.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's great.
I have a note that like, I would even take this over Fade to Black. If I had to choose that moment, I might choose this over Fade to Black even.
Yeah. Or it'd be a good one to swap out, you know, back and forth. Yeah, it's one of my top songs on Death Magnetic for sure.
And this is the first time we see one of James's Ken Lawrence Explorers, which I love his Ken Lawrence Explorers. They're like
they're cool.
wood grain, and they've got the super intricate inlay all the way up the fretboard.
Yeah, and that crazy headstock and stuff.
And it also, like, I know we all know this, and it's easy to tell on the record, but it really drove it home live, especially having the song One come before this one.
Yeah.
It's very, that machine gun shit and the bridge and then the guitar harmony, it's very much them taking a page out of the old One songwriting book.
This is that exact formula, you know, Sanitarium, Fade to Black, all that stuff,
right,
and I'm cool with it.
Well, because to me the song has its own flavor too. It doesn't sound like a ripoff or anything.
Yeah,
it's
for
its
sure.
own thing. Well, for one thing, it's got a chorus. I mean, Fade to Black, the older I get, the more I'm having a problem with the fact that Fade to Black doesn't have a chorus.
The chorus is just a riff.
It's not even a riff. It's just chords. I mean, it's cool. I mean, Fade to Black is one of the greatest songs of all time. I'm just saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Then we get Caskets Go Back Up, which they came down for that tune. And then we get Master of Puppets, which always kills. Rob on the P bass again.
Back on the P bass. This is when they were doing a lot of the crowd participation in this song. I mean, they still do it from time to time. When we saw them, I don't think they did it till the last chorus.
Yeah, they saved the last chorus, yeah.
But this one, it's like every chorus, which sometimes it gets a little bothersome just because I want to hear Hetfield singing it. But having gone to multiple Metallica shows, when you're there and that's happening and 30,000 people around you are singing it, it's almost like breathtaking.
Yeah, and it kind of highlights the family nature of it. We're all in here together. Yeah. We all know the lyrics. I do like when he does the, you know, he talks about right before they do the guitar harmony in the middle part, the slow part, and he's like, let's all sing this in together, and everyone sings the solo.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
And I like on the, they all go around, they all get on the drum riser and go around Lars for that part.
Yeah, that was
awesome.
I
always liked that too. Like, it's like a moment where they all come together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Solidarity on the riser.
I don't think they'll ever play a show without Master of Puppets in the set list.
There's no way.
It's like, would you say it's like the staple of the old stuff?
Of the old stuff,
More than Creeping Death, because they are currently playing sets without Creeping Death.
Yeah,
more so, maybe Seek and Destroy might be give it a run for its money.
I'd say Seek and Destroy and Master Puppets are
kind of going
hand in hand. They have to do it
even more than For Whom the Bell Tolls, like more than Fade to Black.
Yeah, like it or not. Then we have Battery after this.
Yes, I mean, I know you're a real big Battery cat. I am too, but you more so than me.
Yeah, triple A's, double A's, D batteries.
Just any battery that'll work on your, that'll help your flashlight work.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was using a flashlight and I was cooking up some seitan, but it's not meat, but it looks like meat, put it in a sandwich.
I think I need to say something. I don't like when you make fun of vegan Ethan. I think he's made dietary choices in his life to better it. Torben, we haven't heard from you in a few episodes.
Well, I don't know much about all of that. I kill my own food now. Roadkill, that's what we call a barbecue.
I think you come to Denmark and we give you some good food.
I come to Denmark and now hunt. Now, what do they hunt in Denmark?
It's a short trip to New Jersey, and usually we just hunt sewer rats.
Sewer rat. Put it in a good stew.
But they're vegan.
It's a sewer rat, but it's there's no meat involved. No animals were harmed by the using of these products. All right, enough.
So we got Battery.
So we got Battery. It's great.
What I do like, I'm noticing as I'm looking at the set list too, is they do these little, like, you know, double shots of records. You had Shortest Draw into One, and they did it with Death Magnetic. You know, and now we have, you know, Master of Puppets, Battery, and then the next two are Black Album.
Right. Then we get Nothing Else Matters, Enter Sandman.
This version of Nothing Else Matters, I know they did that a lot, and when I saw it live, it really was like a worship experience. When Hetfield is just singing it by himself, it is so beautiful to me, and I love that the drums don't come in for a while.
Well, I've been kind of like perplexed by why Kirk does the intro, and he usually doesn't do it super great, but on this particular DVD, he's playing a Les Paul Custom. It's real beefy, and I like his clean tone. It makes me wonder if like that's James's clean tone.
No, because it's still like ultra compressed. It still sounded a bit shredsy to me. But
I wonder but for those of you who don't know what compression does on a guitar, is it takes loud volumes and brings them down. It takes low volumes, kind of brings them up, and
kind of evens everything out.
Because if it makes me wonder if Kirk's not a dynamic player, like if he just always kind of hits hard.
Maybe, compression.
I know, it's really weird.
Because a lot of times if you hit really hard, like you can almost hear the compression engaging.
Yes.
And right. It's this weird click almost. And that's what I hear in Kirk's playing with his clean tone, is I hear this clickiness every time he strikes strings.
Well, you're right, though. It is a really good version of the song. A lot of that has to do with James's vocal performance.
And James fucking kicks the stool over when it's time to rip a solo. So good. I mean, who doesn't like that?
It's so good. And he does kind of the big dramatic feedback thing. And I never really noticed this, but it's at this point that Kirk does a guitar change, puts the Mummy guitar on.
Yeah.
And then James starts Enter Sandman on his knees. And they've kind of been, that's what they did in the Worldwide Tour.
They've done that for a long time.
And then there's all the great pyro and the ooh, you know, like,
oh, of course, yeah, you have to have that.
And it's cool seeing it on the stage, like on the Worldwide Tour, they're up in these trusses, but and I guess in the arena they've got it all over the stage,
which looks badass. Where we have fire coming out of multiple locations and stuff.
And I bet you it's still got to freak James out. That's still got to freak him out, man.
Little PTSD from the Guns tour.
Got to, right?
It would. I'd imagine it would for me. I mean. I don't know. It's like if someone gets in a motorcycle accident and they're like, I don't know if I could ride a motorcycle again. But if they do, they're maybe extra cautious, or they're just like, it's always in their mind. Like, so maybe for him, it's like, okay, like I'm like, there's one point where fire comes out and he's like on Lars's riser, like, ooh, don't let it get me.
You're right.
But I don't know. James, write in metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com.
We'll get to it. If you're a patron, we'll get to it. If not,
yeah, yeah. We'll answer that one.
I did notice that what they've started, I think they've been doing this for a while, but they play a track of the prayer in the bridge. Instead of James saying it, they play a track. And I noticed on this performance, I don't know if the band was playing a little bit faster than normal, but the track doesn't really get to finish. Like someone cuts it.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it can finish.
I wonder why they wouldn't like edit that or like, you know, doctor that up. And
that's true. That's true.
Although,
that would have been pretty easy to fix, I bet.
Although, I wonder if, because that's coming pretty loud through the PA, I wonder if there would be ambient audio.
It'd be bleeding.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I bet those mics are all gated up.
Yeah, probably.
So they do that. I have another note about, I'm not trying to rip on the Ripper, man. I'm really not. But the Cookie Monster BGVs, when James doing the, take my hand off the never, never land. Yeah. I'm the Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, kudos to him for stepping up to that mic and doing it. I mean, you know, Kirk kicks ass, man. Of course he does.
Yeah,
it does. But however, it does sound like Cookie Monster. So then we get the Frayed Inch Jam, which is super fun. Because someone wrote in and talked about, like, because I kind of criticized the Wizard of Oz thing, but it is great live.
It is great live. My note actually says Clint will hate the Wizard of Oz encore.
It's cool live though, because it's everyone's doing it.
That's the thing, man. Live, it everyone sings along all of a sudden, you know. But you know, it's hard not to have like, you know, the little flying monkeys in your mind and stuff, and the yeah. soldiers from the Wizard of Oz, and
the Lollipop Guild.
Yeah, man.
James playing a black Gibson V, which I don't see a lot either.
Yeah, Kirk, that was cool.
Kirk again with the Bride of Frankenstein ESP, and then they play Killing Time, Sweet Savage cover. I think it's good. I like their covers, whatever. But I'd rather see a Metallica song, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I lean more on, you know, one cover in the set is totally cool with me, and I love it because a lot of their covers have been like a part of my life with Metallica for so long.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, especially like Killing Time, Bread Fan, things like that. The Prince, you know. So it doesn't bother me at all. And I think they always take a cover and they do it so well that it sounds like it's a Metallica song.
Well, he does say before they 100% agree with that. And he says before, he puts this angle on it that I really like, where he says, this is a moment for us to actually pay respect to the bands that inspired us.
Yeah, man.
So I think doing it that way...
Well, and it's a way to get other people into other music, too.
Right, right. Turn them
on. I mean, that's... Like, I've recorded cover songs and stuff, and, you know, someone might be like, oh, dude, I've never really heard that song that way, and it's gotten me into listening to this and that.
We're recording cover songs right now, and I wonder if any listeners of our podcast have heard of them.
Yeah, we're hoping that some of you guys get into Metallica. That's
We're covering a band called Metallica.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. You should check them out sometime.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, I enjoyed Killing Time.
Hey, and back to your point about them doubling up, then the next two are Kill 'Em All tracks.
Yeah, totally, man.
Whiplash and Seek and Destroy. Whiplash is great. They've been doing it without that third verse, though, for a long time. The verse about the marshals being loud.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's interesting because the other Kill 'Em All track, when they did Four Horsemen, they skipped the beautiful ballady solo section, which I'm so bummed at.
Which it's, you know, it's their prerogative. It's their song. They can, of course, do anything they want. But it is kind of a bummer. Like, especially with Whiplash, it's like, dude, this song is 2 minutes long. It's like the fastest song in the world. Are you cutting it for length purposes? Are you, like, what's the deal?
Yeah, no idea. Or who knows? Maybe he just is like, God, I don't like these lyrics.
He quit the band. Why doesn't anyone understand? He quit the band. We're not doing the third verse.
Not doing the third verse.
Verses too stock.
And of course, Seek and Destroy, closing it out, is always great. I mean, especially in Hetfield, even back then, was still doing the, you know, all you have to learn is three words, seek, you know.
Well, and it's cool because it's Halloween, so they put on these kind of Iron Maiden looking masks.
Yeah, there's super James creepy looking masks. Hair.
And James actually, when Lars puts his mask on, James is like, wow, you look better. Nice teeth.
Yeah, Lars and Rob have one that's kind of like a demon clown kind of looking thing. Almost remind me like Slipknot or something. But yeah, I thought
James.
It was kind of fun. It's
like
at first
with the purple hair. Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Like at first when they were putting them on, it's like, is this a little cheesy? But then it's like, oh fuck it, it's Halloween. We're having fun. Like, hell, I've played Halloween shows where you dress up.
Well, and I like too. They were doing this a lot on that tour. Is they drop all the shit ton of those black balls at the end.
Dude, you know how hard I try to get one of those things and take it home with me?
Well, they're definitely very coveted collector's items with fans who end up getting to take one home.
I tried, yeah. It was one of those things where, like, because I remember they came down when I was at the show, and in the round thing, I was kind of near Big Mick and behind a barricade because we got kind of hooked up. Mm-hmm. And those things were coming around. I remember, like, I was kind of standing on the barricade, and I remember smacking one at one point, and then I was like, why didn't I just grab that? Fucking idiot.
Grabs that.
I think you should grab that.
You didn't have Torben there inspiring you.
And I know.
James does like the classic frontman thing. Scanning the scene in Quebec tonight. Like, you know,
oh,
the
I mean,
city
that's,
and the
that,
lyrics.
That
classic.
That song demands for the insert city here moment.
And then I guess this happens once a show, and everyone knows about how we feel about Mr. Roberto Trujillo. He does this helicopter thing, man.
Yeah. Maybe he's just trying to fly, man. He hasn't figured it out yet. Cut him some slack, man.
That's probably what it is. He's trying to fly.
I mean, he looks a little loco doing it, but it's, you know, whatever. It's Robert. Let him do his thing.
It's
weird.
Great. It's him. It's just him. But
I just don't like spinning and getting dizzy personally.
Well, there's
so.
No way he's not getting dizzy. So he's,
yeah,
you know,
man, getting dizzy is my new drug.
And then they finish seeking this. And I like how they do it with all the house lights on, too. A lot
yeah,
of bands
that is really
do that.
Cool.
Pearl Jam usually does that. And
yep.
It's just a moment to say, look, there's no bullshit, no smoke and mirrors. Let's just all turn the lights on and get a good look at each other and have a good time before we go home.
Man, what I really like about them coming onto the stage and off the stage is it's almost like a wrestling event or something. Like, it's a long walk to get backstage. So, like, high-fiving fans.
Yep.
I dug that. And the one thing, this to me... I don't know if you made a note about this, but this was like the heartstrings being tugged moment.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. I know.
Goes to Hetfield, and there's that kid with Down syndrome.
And he gives him one of his wristbands.
Oh, so cool. He already had a drumstick, too.
But you can tell Lars already get... Man, my takeaway from that was like, man, these dudes are so cool, man.
Totally.
They saw that dude and wanted to make that night even more special for him. Lars had already given him the stick. James gives him the wristband. Like, it's so cool.
Imagine how his dad felt, like, watching all this unfold. Like,
right.
I'm bringing my son. Maybe it was his first time seeing Metallica. But all of a sudden he gets a drumstick, and then James leans down and gives him a wristband. It's just like, God, man, that kid's life is made.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And then from there we see, or maybe it's right before this, we see for some reason Kirk walking back to the dressing room with fans waiting for high fives, and he's holding like a rag to his mouth. Do you notice that?
I did not notice that.
I don't know if like maybe he's a germaphobe or something.
He is, by the way. Well, if you'll notice, he never touches anyone else's hands.
Okay. So yeah, so it's him walking. He has like a small black hand towel.
What if he had like one of those like Zika virus like masks on when he's going out to talk to fans? Like
that
a
would
doctor's
be funny.
Mask.
It's weird because you see him like he'll like shake hands with people in the meet and greet and stuff.
I don't know. I don't know. Watch it through that lens. Because when they open this show, they're all running around like the way Jason used to. And they're like, James and Rob especially, shaking hands.
Oh, they definitely do.
Kirk never does that.
Yeah, and Lars goes right into like a hooded robe. And
he's like, got to have that robe. Lars and his robes, man.
I saw them like when I saw that show, like where they exited the stage and went to backstage was right where we were standing, basically. And I straight up, I'm like, oh, here comes Lars in his robe.
Old robe clad Lars.
It's totally fine. So I will say in all seriousness, a lot of people do that after either playing a show, you're a boxer, something, and it's usually so you don't cool down too quick, and sometimes you can get sick that way.
Like Rocky. So
it's exactly. Thank you. Absolutely. Hey yo,
Adrian.
Hey yo, I know all about the robes and stuff.
Sue me for what?
Sue
touch
me.
Touch me and I'll sue.
My ring's outside. Don't get me going on that.
All right. Well, we did it. We talked about Quebec Magnetic. I think it's probably the best conversation about this DVD any two people have ever had in the history of everything.
Yeah. What I think real quick before we end this thing is let's read off the songs that are on the bonus disc, because I found it so insanely crazy that there wasn't one Ride the Lightning song on the main disc.
Is that true? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Bonus disc, I think the only one they did was is
From the Bell Tolls. Yeah.
So From the Bell Tolls, Holier Than Thou, Cyanide, Turn the Page, All Nightmare Long, Damage Inc., Bread Fan, and Phantom Lord.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
Isn't that crazy?
No Fight Fire, no Ride the Lightning, no Creeping Death, no Fade to Black. Those would be the...
No Escape.
Well, of course. They're never playing Escape again. Ever. It's over.
Probably not. But man, yeah, it's insane that they like, okay, cool. These are the songs we're doing. Here's the set list. This is what we're releasing on the main DVD. No Lightning.
Yeah, that kind of bums me out. Which, by the way, on a subsequent volume of our covers EP, I am definitely doing Escape.
You are?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And that kind of let's wrap it up. Let's say bye to these folks. So here's the stuff. Here's your takeaways. Quebec Magnetic is badass. We just explained why. Go see it. And if you've seen it a million times, maybe go watch it again. It's good to dip back into that era.
Oh yeah.
Show's growing. Everything cool is happening with the show. We got the t-shirts. If you want that t-shirt, you need to email us at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com with your name, your size. We'll tell you how to pay us. We do it through PayPal, but I'll tell you all that in the email. The shirts are really cool. Once you guys start getting them, we're going to start shipping them next week. They haven't even gotten to HQ2 yet. So there's the t-shirts. The Patreon thing, we're doing these EPs. You heard them at the top of the show. They're actually going to sound pretty cool. They're going to sound great.
They're going to be awesome.
If you want access to those EPs that we're going to... And we're going to be doing several of these, so...
Yeah, and the EPs, we talked about it before, it's a Patreon exclusive thing. Like, unless someone on Patreon has another friend they share it with, whatever. But... As of now, this isn't going to be something we're going to be like releasing.
No, we're just going to do it for our folks over there. We have about 35 patrons now, so there's a community of people growing over there that have access to this stuff. Patreon, it's patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you want to keep up with what's going on with Ethan and I, with our various travels and stuff, we're on all the social crap. Go find it.
Yeah, you can find us too. Clint Wells and Ethan Luck, that's our username for pretty much everything.
Yeah, come find us. We chat with you listeners throughout the week, literally every week. Almost every day we're chatting with you folks. So get in on that shit and...
get involved.
What's your deal, Ethan? How much longer are you gone? Another couple of weeks?
Two weeks from today, the tour is done, and I'm actually flying to Oakland, California, just for a couple days to meet up with my wife and go visit family.
All right.
And then I'm back in Nashville after that, and pretty much I'm home for almost a month after this, which will be a nice break.
We've got some good sauce cooking up for September.
Oh, September's going to be a monster month of episodes for sure.
All right. Well, that was fun. I think we did it.
I know we did it.
Sue me for what?
If I can actually correct you, it's just sue me.
Well, I can't keep it. I can't keep it straight because I haven't eaten meat in about 16 months. My iron is very low.
Oh, well, on that note, everybody.
All right. Peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.